Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, all right. Happy Monday. It's the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I'm Chris Elio, filling in for Sean Carey today at the producer desk. We're sitting here waiting for Steve Jones to meander his way into the Sunbury Motor Studio. Steve Jones Show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance today. Purdy Insurance. If you want things done right, you want to be covered, you want to feel secure, Purdy Insurance. That's the way to go. They've been doing it forever. Longer than I've been alive. So I trust anything that's been around longer than I have. When it comes to knowledge, anyway. If you want to call into the show, the way it works here, you get involved, you talk to us about what's going on, whatever we're talking about, or if you have your own topic regarding sports, you can call in 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. And you have to love this time of year when it comes to sports. Monday afternoon after a football weekend in September, things are starting to round into shape a little bit in the NFL and in college football. You had a lot of conference games for the first time this weekend, so that was a big deal. And I'm sure we'll dive into that head first, with Steve being the Penn State guy. I'm sure he's going to have a lot to say on what exactly is happening in Michigan. What's happening in Michigan? Holy cow. It's one thing to lose to Wisconsin at the Madhouse in Madison, but to get the doors blown off of you when you were ranked higher, that's crazy. That was a disgrace on Saturday. There's nothing else that can really be said. Jim Harbaugh is no doubt on his way out. I'd be shocked if he was there next year. Shocked. He's going to hop back to the NFL as soon as he possibly can, I have no doubt. And I'm sure Steve will have his opinions on that. Then we turn to the pros. I mean, what's with the Eagles? Are the Lions for real? They're 2-0-1. I mean, after they choked away a huge lead to Arizona in week one, I thought for sure the Lions were on to another, 5-9-1 type of Detroit Lions season. But here they are, 2-0-1. They beat the Chargers last week, who a lot of people said were going to be, make a lot of noise in the AFC. Now they beat the Eagles, who a lot of people put in the Super Bowl this year. Now, I know the Eagles are dealing with a ton of injuries. Wentz is literally throwing to me. I got a call last week from the Philadelphia Eagles asking if I could be a third-string wide receiver. So they're really, really running thin in that department. Aguilar is a third-string receiver at best. He's a third option at best. When you have Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson on your team and neither one of them are on the field, you're thin at the position. Let's just say that. And Aguilar dropped a bunch yesterday. I think he dropped three or four in his hand type of passes yesterday. So we're going to have Matt Leon on the show. He'll be up talking about, I'm sure, the Eagles and all things Philadelphia sports as he normally does. Elsewhere around the NFL yesterday, the Chiefs and the Ravens hooked up in what I think will be somewhat of a...
Okay, let's just bottom line.
Okay, bring it.
Where everything is. Okay?
Okay, let's do that.
Okay. Your Mets...
Oh, stop. I was going to get to baseball.
Your Mets stink.
Oh, stop it. They don't stink. Come on. They're better than the Phillies.
your Jets stink.
Well, my Jets are an abomination. They don't just stink, dude. They're bad. Okay. They're just bad.
So everything that you root for is bad. And so now I've got
the self-esteem boost.
I've got to spend the next 2 hours with Captain Depression here.
Hey, I'm okay, man. It's all over but the shouting in the National League, man. The Brewers are four games up on everybody. The Cubs are in a nosedive. The Phillies are done.
The Mets are bad.
They're not that bad. Yeah. You could say they're bad. They're not that bad. Their bullpen is bad. their bullpen cost them this season. If you really want to do a true analysis, I know you're poking fun, but if you want to do a true analysis, their bullpen blew 19 games this year. 19 games. If they would have won half of those, they'd be challenging for the NL East. They're not that bad. They're not that bad.
But if they scored a few more runs, then it takes the bullpen out.
That's not true. When you're winning by five, I'm just kidding. I was gonna say when you're winning 10-4 in a game, you shouldn't lose.
See, you could take anything and you could turn it any way you want.
Welcome to the show, Steve. Thank you for that. I knew I was gonna get a Met bashing. Hey, look, here's the bottom
and the Jets.
Oh, I don't even want to talk about them.
The Jets.
Listen, I watched Georgia State and Texas State play a thrilling game the other night. Either one of those teams could give the Jets a challenge right now. They're a bad, bad football team.
There is no college team on the planet that can be a pro team.
No, I know that. I was being facetious. But the bottom line is the Jets are bad. The Jets literally were so thin in their team that a few injuries and they've literally tanked. Like, they're just done. And I know the Patriots are the Patriots. The Patriots look like Southern Columbia in the NFL right now. They're just steamrolling teams. But their first challenge will come this week, possibly. Do the Bills pose a challenge, you think? Bills are undefeated, too.
The Bills do, because, number one, let's start with this. The Bills actually play pretty well defensively. And that's always been Sean McDermott's calling card. You hear the story about Sean McDermott coming here to Penn State during the summertime?
No.
Did you ever hear that story?
No.
Oh, yeah. No, this show has all sorts of info on it.
All right. Okay.
Terry Pegula took Sean McDermott, and I think they were on their way to Pittsburgh for something, and they stopped in because Pegula wanted to meet Kale Sanderson. So Sean McDermott was with him, and they went over to Rec Hall, over to the Lorenzo Wrestling Complex to meet Kale. And when they were there, right, they look in there, and the wrestling team was going through its famous, yeah, if you know Penn State wrestling, you know that this has been one of the things for a long time, their famous dodgeball drill.
Right.
And they were playing dodgeball at the time. And it was a big deal for those guys to sit down and just at least talk with Kale. Look, you want to talk with as many successful people as possible. To find out what, you know, it may not be your sport. It may not even be your profession. But one thing I've noticed about great leaders or people that are in leadership positions, you know what books they read about? They read about biographies of other leaders.
Of course. That makes sense.
I remember he read this long biography on Winston Churchill, and I've got it now. I've started into it, but he read about Winston Churchill. He was the last time I talked to Joe was a couple days before Christmas, about a month before he died. And we were sitting in the house, and he was reading about Harry Truman. Well, same thing. James Franklin reads books about leaders all the time. Well, you want to, you know, other people who lead want to talk and pick the brain of somebody who leads. And so for Sean McDermott, I think it was important that he sit down with a Kale Sanderson, even though it's a different sport. But is there something he can draw from him that in a position of leadership where Kale is so successful, how does he achieve his success? How does he get the most out of his individuals? And and that was part of what Sean McDermott wanted to do when he came here. So now you'll apply that this week when the Patriots take on the Buffalo Bills.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting one.
But there's also something else that's important that I'm watching last night's game between the Browns and the Rams. And they're showing the Browns defense, and the Browns are playing the same defense, you know, essentially, schematically, that the Patriots played in the Super Bowl. And I'm sitting there, and I'm laughing. I'm looking. I'm laughing. You wonder why I'm laughing?
Sure. I'm
laughing because I'm the person that says that we have a lot of tweaks going on, but do we really have anything new? Not really. Right? Bill Belichick, one of the one of the areas of Bill Belichick that makes him a great tactician is that Bill Belichick, if you know anything about him, is a real connoisseur of history. He really likes the history of football. Well, part of going through the history of football is you see what worked and what didn't work. Now, that six lineman deal that you saw last night with a linebacker sometimes too if they took a safety and crept him up, that's the old Maryland wide tackle six that Jerry Claiborne ran for years at Maryland in the 70s and into the 80s. He was one of the few people doing it at the time, but every year Penn State had to play, and every year I'd have to ask Joe Paterno in the pregame show about playing the wide tackle six. Well, that's what it was.
Right.
That's why I'm laughing at it, looking at it last night, going, and look, and you got three over here, and the Collinsworth is circling, and three over here, and I'm sitting there like going, yeah, okay, whoop-de-doo. I've seen that. I saw that every year for about 8 years.
Well,
what the heck?
It's a copycat league, man. Like, you're not getting
well,
a ton.
It's not a copycat league. It's the ability to be a historian and understand what worked and say, hey, look, is there something out there that we should take a look at that fits our personnel that we can play?
Right.
And he found it. And he found it in a defense that was played in the 70s and the 80s by Jerry Claiborne in Maryland. And then he brought it with him to Kentucky for the period of time he was there. But that's what this is.
And being that student that Belichick is, and then couple that with the fact that he's probably the best I've ever seen at identifying a situation and making the adjustment in the game, you know, through the game plan and whatnot, like,
sure.
Yeah, it's tremendous. Belichick is insane.
But again, he uses Ernie Adams to break down film left and right, analytics, the whole deal. And then he looks at his personnel, and I'd like to sit down with him someday and say, look, did you, how much did you look at the Jerry Claiborne wide tackle six before you played it?
Right.
Because that's what it was.
Of course.
I'm watching it last night saying, I've seen that defense a few times in my lifetime. Right? Right. Meanwhile, they act like they'd never seen it before.
Right.
Like,
well,
okay.
Some of these analysts who, you know, like Chris Collinsworth, who is a wide receiver, and, you know, and he didn't study. He might not be a student like Belichick is. That's why he's an analyst. He should know, but maybe he doesn't. You know, so that's why
Well, no, I don't expect an analyst to know that, but I think a head coach... And again, it was nothing new along the way. Nothing. Like I saw it. Now you had to put your own tweaks and variations to it because you got to make it work to what you do and what the opponent does.
Well,
but again, this is what I try to tell my students in class all the time. If you're going to be good at something, the greatest teacher that you can have is history. Greatest teacher you can have is history.
Mm-hmm.
History shows you where the mistakes were made. History shows you where the successes were made and how they got there. And history is not what happened 2 weeks ago on social media. That's not history.
Right.
Right? History is a great teacher in politics. History is a great teacher in legislatures. History is a great teacher in war. History is a great teacher in weather. History is a great teacher in sports. Right? I mean, talking to quarterbacks on radios. Paul Brown did that in the early 50s. Now, he didn't perfect it, but he tried it.
Right.
Right? Tried to do it. The shotgun. Hey, spread offense. The 49ers ran that in the 50s. Right? In a lot of ways, it's a lot of the same concepts that were used in the old single wing in college. Right? It's just now today you've got great athletes doing it, quick, fast, great shape, year-round, working out, doing it. But I always love the, he's an offensive genius. You know, like I'm sitting there going, okay, you're not really doing something I haven't seen before.
Well, and it's not just that, but how many of these offensive geniuses have we seen that aren't very genius? Like, they just turn out not to be. And history will tell you, in terms of the Browns and what they did last night and what they've been doing defensively, when you have a guy like Myles Garrett, you're going to do a lot of good things. So,
well, personnel makes a big difference. I can come up with the greatest scheme in the history of man. I've got 11 rum-dums running it. We're going to have a rum-dum defense.
Exactly.
Believe me, personnel, okay, one of the greatest teachers of all time. History's a great teacher. Coaches that don't have personnel don't win.
Yep. You get the all second right? coming of LT there.
Right. I mean, suddenly out of nowhere, you've got personnel and you're winning.
Yep.
And that makes that, that's another part of the great. But I think that one of the biggest mistakes that people in our business make is not understanding the history of what they're in. That's a huge mistake. Let's take weather. Like, believe me, in the 1930s, if you sit down and go through your weather history, it was hot. It was hot. Right? You want to know why I know that? Because I used to do a segment in a morning show, This Day in History. Just this, not sports history, but in history. Right? High temperature on this day was, and they, like, in Oklahoma in the 1930s, the record high in this state was in the 30s. 32, 36, I'm thinking, it was hot back then.
And of course, because you were standing in the middle of it in the 1930s, so...
Well, considering I was the one measuring it. No, but I'm just saying, but you've got to be able to understand the history of what you're in, because then you realize, I've seen this before, and at least a variation of it. It doesn't mean there's nothing like tweaks and differences to it and so forth, but there's some basics to it. And, I mean, we have, you could talk today about the influence of the college game on the pro game. Well, it doesn't mean the college game hasn't influenced it before, because when Chuck Fairbanks became the head coach of the New England Patriots in 1972, when Joe decided to stay at Penn State, Chuck Fairbanks brought with him to the NFL the Oklahoma 3-4 defense.
Right. Well, doesn't it make sense that the college game would always influence the pros, because you're going to see more ingenuity in the college game because you are working with lesser talent in the college game, number one. And then number two, you have more room. You have more room for creativity in the college game than you do in the pro game.
You do, but again, you've got in the NFL, you got to draft for it, though. In other words, if I'm an NFL coach and I inherit a team that has Aaron Rodgers, okay, I'm Greg LaFleur. I take over the Packers. I'm not going to put in a college offense because I've got Aaron Rodgers there.
Right. No, that makes sense. I understand that totally. But what I'm saying is that I would imagine that the majority of these styles of offense that you're going to see were born in college football first and then worked its way into, like Bill Walsh probably brought the West Coast offense from college first. I don't know the history of it, to be honest with you. I'm just theorizing.
I actually developed it in Cincinnati with the Bengals. Then he brought it to college.
Well, then I was.
He brought it to Stanford. He was the Bengals offensive coordinator.
Gotcha.
So is it with Kenny Anderson and those guys? That's where he developed the concepts for it. I think some elements from college translate over, and then you've got. The NFL's been very stubborn about what they've done with quarterbacks over the years. They've never really been big on moving quarterbacks, but Kyler Murray and how he moves. I sit there and go, you ever hear of Fran Tarkenton?
Right. Or any of these guys. There's a ton of them.
You ever hear of Fran Tarkenton? One of the great throwers of all time.
Right.
Out there. Quarterbacked his team into 3 Super Bowls. I mean, he did all the stuff Kyler Murray does, except he called his own plays.
Right.
Right. And it's like, he called his own plays, did he? Really? Yeah. He's saying so. He's not a robot. All right. Okay. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. It was not a great day for the Eagles yesterday. Matt Leon. In the next half hour, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
That's interesting because I've done a lot of reading in my lifetime because I want to know as much about history as possible. And the reason is I don't care whether it's news, sports, weather. I want to be able to see what lessons can be learned from history. And that then leads into who our sponsors are today. A great history tells you that you're going to end up with a great situation. Purdy Insurance and Sunbury Motors both fall into that category. For decades, Purdy Insurance has been here insuring the people of our area because they have the great reputation and the proven track record of finding you the right insurance, auto, home, life, business, whatever it may be. They will work as hard as they can to find you the best price. Some insurance you can buy over state lines. They'll do that. If they can find you the best price, they will. And if there's ever a claim or something needs to be updated, they will go to work for you immediately because the customer means everything. Purdy Insurance has a great reputation because they've got the history to back it up. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Same story with Sunbury Motors. When you've been in business 104 years and you've sold as many vehicles as they have in this area, and have so many repeat customers who absolutely believe in them, that's the kind of history you can rely on and count on. Best product, best sales staff, best service department. That's Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One quick sports note before we get to Matt Leon and the Eagles. The University of Houston, Dan Holgerson's now the head coach. And going into the season, the guy that was really the cornerstone of what they wanted to do this season, not just offensively, but it was a team, was their quarterback, De'Ara King. And De'Ara King, by the way, is off to a really good start. He has thrown in four games, 663 yards and six touchdowns. He's rushed for 312 yards and six touchdowns. He has accounted for six touchdowns so far, and he's accounted for 975 yards in four games. And he's also broken Tim Tebow's record by throwing and running for touchdowns in 15 consecutive games. Well, remember, the fourth game of the season is now over. He announced today he's transferring. He is a senior, but he's going to transfer, which means he can play anywhere he wants next year right away as a grad transfer, and this season will be a redshirt. His father, Eric King, confirmed that his son is leaving Houston and transferring. He says it's the best decision for him at this point. Very, very tough decision. He's got a lot of teammates riding on him. Sometimes you got to be a little self-centered and do what's best for you. Sports with the ability to provide the wow moment. You just sit back and say, wow.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, good luck to him.
That's all you can say, right?
Good luck. Yep. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I'm bagging you.
Yeah,
I'm out.
It's the selfishness of sports these days. I mean, you're seeing it everywhere with in the pros, and now it's permeated to college. The whole thing. It's everywhere.
I have to get mine. What is my value and self-worth?
I mean, in football's the only sport that I think I would be okay with it. Only because it's such a short-lived career and it could be over in a second. And I know that can happen for anything, but it's more likely in football that you're going to get your lights put out or you're going to have your knee like destroyed to the point where it's unusable than any other sport where you have to maximize your time. And if you see that, you know, you got to grab it while it's hot, you know. But every other sport, it's just selfishness.
Well, I'm a senior. I'm the leader of my team. I'm transferring after four games because I've got to go get mine. Get yours for what?
It's a crap move. It is. It's a crap move. But
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know enough about him where I've seen him play. He's a very good college quarterback. But in terms of translating to the next level, I don't think he translates to the next level.
Yeah, maybe he feels he does. I don't know.
Oh, they all feel they do. Please, Chris. Okay, believe me, every single person that has been recruited by a Power 5 school, all right, and signs with a Power 5 school, believes the day they sign, it's the next step toward going to the league.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
They all think that because they've had nothing but success to get there. All right. Let's talk about the Eagles, those who went from high school to college, then did actually make it to the league. And sometimes the day doesn't go very well, like yesterday in Philadelphia. And with a game coming up against Green Bay on Thursday night, the Eagles are sitting 1-2 right now. With that, we go to Philadelphia, Matt Leon. Welcome, friend. Great to have you with us.
Drop passes. I had to laugh. The safety for the Lions at the end of the game, like, hey, at the end of the game, and it turned out he never touched the ball.
There was a lot of that yesterday.
Yeah, like, look at me, look at you do what? What do you think about the, obviously they need to get their guys back, but your opinion on what you're seeing from the pass game right now?
I mean you gotta catch the ball. I mean, we can sit here and talk schemes and guys not there. I mean, you know, I think 7 drops, and I don't know what the cutoff is for a drop in an NFL statistical, but I mean, you know, these are balls like the one at the end, our single white side. Yeah, that's a tough catch, but guess what? That's why you were drafted, because you can go up and make catches like that. The one to Dallas Goedert, he dropped in the end zone. I know he's dealing with a calf issue, but that was criminal. I mean, that's one you've already started putting the number in the book, and he can't bring it in. These were not, you know, these were balls that just have to be brought up, and there's a undercurrent of people blaming Carson Wentz for Sunday that I just don't understand, when, you know, he can't throw it and catch it. And, you know, these were not throws that were made where he didn't lead guys or he threw it a little bit behind him. I mean, he's hitting guys between, you know, he hits Aguilar between the 1 and the 3. Like, he's putting the ball in guys' hands and not bringing it in. I don't know what you do. I don't know, as a coaching staff, I don't know what you do. Tell the guys catch the ball. Like, it's just that simple.
So what happens to be the status of some of the key guys that are out right now? Because it's a quick turnaround to Thursday night.
It sounds like, listening to Doug Peterson's press conference today, I would be more optimistic about the possibility of Alshon Jeffrey than DeSean Jackson.
Okay.
I think I don't know that I would lean towards either of them, but I think if anybody's going to play, I think it would be Alshon Jeffrey. I think Doug Peterson said he was hopeful. I don't know if that was the word he used, but he kind of on Friday indicated that he was hopeful. You know, he was hoping that Jeffrey would be able to go Sunday, and he didn't. So, you know, we'll wait and see. But I would say, if you're going to characterize them, I would keep an eye on Jeffrey, and I would kind of assume Deshaun's not going to play.
All right. And the quick turnaround. I mean, look, these guys feel like they go through multiple accidents during the course of a game. It takes a long time to recover. There's no bye week for Green Bay or Philadelphia. Plus, the Eagles have to travel. So what are your thoughts on playing Thursdays?
I think it is tough. I mean, you know, and Doug Peterson indicated today they're actually not going to practice, as far as a full-scale practice between now and Thursday. It's going to be walkthroughs and, I think he said, mental reps. It's hard to argue with it. I mean, you got a team that's banged up, which I think, you know, you might have one full practice in a normal situation with a normal amount of recovery and guys on, you know, dealing with injuries. But in this case, you know, where they're trying to get so many guys back, you know, I think it's probably the right move. I don't know, you know, if the league is insistent on having these Thursday night games, I don't know what the answer is, because it's really, really difficult. And it's why these Thursday night games are often either not competitive or not very interesting, because the guys haven't fully recovered from the game, you know, 96 hours earlier.
Well, I mean, there is an answer to it, though. I mean, there is an answer.
And the bye week, have everybody on the bye the week before?
Yeah, in other words, schedule. Okay, I'm going to have Green Bay play Philadelphia. Green Bay, Philadelphia should not have been – they should have had their bye week this week. I mean, and I
agree with that.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that, but they've shown no inclination to want to put that much thought into it. You know, so.
Well, I understand that. I agree with you. But because you look at college football, yeah, both Utah and USC did play on Saturday last week, and they played on a Friday. But you notice, if there's ever a Thursday night college game, both teams had a bye week every time before they play. And that's what the NFL needs to do. I mean, you know, you're allowed to do bye weeks, so, you know, you can schedule bye weeks. I mean, they always act like scheduling is the Manhattan Project.
That's right.
It's not a nuclear fuel deal here.
And you act like they're actually more concerned about the money aspect than the well-being of the player. That's shocking to me.
Okay, while I have maybe a different point of view than the league about the cash cow, and that the product to me leads to cash, instead of sacrificing people every 4 days to play a game. What's right with the Eagles right now?
I think Carson Wentz has been very good. I mean, I think he looks back to his 2017 form. Like last year, he never looked like the Wentz in 2017 because he was still working his way back from the knee, and then, you know, obviously had been suffering for some time from the back. This, he looks free and easy. They had seven drops, and these were throws that desperately need to be caught.
Yes.
Past that, there's the amazing thing of they're in one of those ruts now where they can't get out of their own way. And what I mean by that is we spent the whole week leading up to Detroit, or I shouldn't say the whole week, but a main topic of conversation was why can't they score early? Getting off the slow starts, legitimate criticism. They, you know, I think last in the league or one of the worst teams as far as total points last year hadn't scored. This year they go right down on their first drive. You got a little bounce in your step. They get a field goal. It's an impressive drive. You're thinking, okay, boom, 12 seconds later, kickoff return for a touchdown. So the special teams lets down the offense. Then they have where, you know, the defense would get four straight stops and give the offense time to get back in it. And then as soon as the offense scores to make it a three-point game, boom, defense gives up a drive right down the field. So the defense leaves up the offense. And then the special teams come through late with the block field goal, and the offense can't get a first down. So the offense lets down the special teams. They can't build on anything, and I don't know what the answer to that is. Like, I don't know, you know, how you quote-unquote fix that or how you get the whole thing running on, you know, at the same level. But that's one of the big things is they just can't quite, you know, get every piston firing at the same time. And like I said, I don't know what the answer is. Like, it, you know, they're just in a rut. But that was the first thing I thought of is there had been so much talk last week about why they can't start fast. And they start fast, and they immediately give it back. And not just give it back, but they find themselves in a hole where all that work was completely, you know, thrown to the side.
Right, exactly. I have to ask you about the Phillies. How disappointing a season in the end is this for the city? Because there was such buildup in the offseason. Whether the buildup was justified or not, that's irrelevant. How tough has it been?
It's really disappointing, and I think the excitement level, and I remember saying this to people, and I may have said it to you on the air back in February and March, if nothing else, this year will be fun. I don't know if it's going to be the playoffs, a division title, what it's going to mean win-wise, but you know what, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of excitement. And the amazing thing to me is that it's been just the opposite. Right. It's been dental surgery. It's been games where they win, but you come away almost feeling like they lost because it was so frustrating to watch. They had one game a couple weeks ago where they scored early. They ended up winning like 8-2. They got good pitch. Like, everything worked as it should have. And I commented to somebody like, boy, that's like the first game in months where you haven't watched the game and wanted to scream something at the TV at least once.
Right.
Like, you know, and that's what's disappointing. I think you could see some of the pitching problems, you know. I think it was worst case scenario that what came out that
sure.
Not one of the young starters grabbed a rotation spot, like took control and said, this is, I'm the guy. I don't think they were crazy for going into spring training with the guys they did, or going into the season coming out of spring training, because I don't think it was irrational to think that one of these guys would really take control and want the job. Now, it begs another question that I think might be a bigger question going forward is, why don't guys get better with this organization?
Right.
And
which you've brought up before.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at guys that, you know, that flatline or regress, and then they seem to go other places, and they seem to take steps forward, maybe not turn into a superstar, but, you know, J.P. Crawford, Jorge Alfaro took steps forward in other organizations they never took here. And even the guys you look at and point to as success stories this year, like Scott Kingery, he was much better than last year, but he's hitting in the 250s. You know, Rhys Hoskins hitting in the 230s, might be in the 220s. I haven't looked the last couple of days. Like, that's unacceptable for what you need out of these guys. So I think there needs to be a giant, 30,000-foot look at this organization, because nobody improves from a young player standpoint, and that's alarming to me, going forward. You can't sign 9 Bryce Harpers. You can't, right. You have to develop some of these guys, and it's just disconcerting that young guys don't get better here. And like, for instance, I'll bet you a gentleman's bet right now of lunch that Nick Williams will go somewhere else next year and become a very serviceable Major League Baseball player.
I'm not taking that.
not a superstar, but he'll go somewhere, hit 275, 280, and maybe be a corner outfielder on a mediocre team. And I think that will be a giant indictment of the organization. Once again, I don't know what the answer is, but I just know that we've got enough of sample size here where for years guys don't improve.
Very quickly, who's on the podcast?
This week coming up, it'll be Mike McLaughlin coming up on Wednesday, women's basketball coach at the University of Pennsylvania. Fun thing about Mike, one of the top winning percentage coaches in NCAA history in women's basketball. What's interesting is he never won a game in 3 years as a pro player, but yet he's a phenomenal winning coach, and find out what that story is one-on-one with Matt Leon.
Matt, thanks so much. I know you got to get going.
Appreciate it, my friend.
Matt Leon joining us from Philadelphia. Next half hour, we'll talk about the Steelers' trials and tribulations with Chris Mack. We'll do that in the next half hour as we continue. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Mark and Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Next half hour, Chris Mack on the trials and tribulations of the Steelers. We'd have Sean on in this segment, but too depressed to be here today.
I heard he's on suicide watch.
And we'd have the suit on today, but he is now locked in a room and under doctor's orders, we can't let him out.
See, it's almost like my Jets are 0-3, but it's almost worse when you're a Steelers fan because you're used to winning. So,
well, that's the difference. See, that's what's interesting about the Steelers. The Steelers and the Patriots have really been the two teams that, for the most part, not perfect, but for the most part, have avoided what is supposed to be a dip in production. The NFL is designed that